pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate. You're listening to news, views, and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business, and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Hello and welcome. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove podcast coming to you from Australia. This is a podcast where we talk about news and politics and sex and religion. I, of course, am Trevor, aka the Iron Fist. With me, as always, is Joe the Tech Guy.
Morning, all.
And returning like the prodigal son that he is, Scott the Velvet Glove.
G'day, Trevor. G'day, Joe. G'day, listeners. How are you all? It's been a while. So anyway, I'm coming in to you from Mackay, which is in North Queensland, and it's actually warmed up quite a lot, so I've turned on the air conditioner tonight. So, yeah.
Okay. It's warm enough up there for the air conditioner, and it's good to have you with us, Scott. We were talking about it earlier.
Pleased to be back.
I played the sort of highlights of our submarine talks over the years, and it was good to hear your voice. And then, dear listener, Shay is away. She's in Perth at the moment, and despite being given strict instructions to take her microphone and stuff with her, she forgot. And so anyway, Shay won't be with us tonight or the next week, but whenever she gets back from Perth, she'll be back and Scott's filling in. So just a cameo role, Scott, and good to have you. And of course,
very much.
If you're in the chat room, say hello. And Dire Straits, John Simmons says hello. And so tonight, what are we going to talk about? Well, of course, we're going to talk about submarines. <It's>, with Scott here and with what's been going on, we have to talk about submarines and, oh, a bunch of other things. But you know what? Who knows if we'll even get to them, because submarines are going to take a bit of effort to go through. So let's kick off with a submarine discussion. And, you know, where do you begin with this fiasco? And my main point is I'm just so disappointed in the regular press, not only just the Murdoch press, where I have very low expectations, but even the other press like The Guardian and places like that, just really poor coverage of the whole submarine fiasco. So they really demonstrated, even the people, you know, the ABC, Laura Tingle, people like this who should know something about these issues, just clearly know nothing about them. And that's what sort of disappointed me the most. So the ABC and other groups basically allowed the government in the first few days to sort of spin a story, which was, wow, we're getting nuclear, so it's okay to ditch France. And how wonderful it is that the USA thinks we're so special that we're getting these nuclear submarines. And the only two places that I saw any criticism of this in the early days was Crikey, where Bernard Keane says, strange, I could swear the government has utterly screwed up a $100 billion submarine program. Well, all I'm reading about is how exciting it is that we're going nuclear. And, of course, the John Menadue blog was going crazy with submarine articles. So, Scott, your thoughts when you heard about the deal, the dumping of the French, the signing up to some vague deal with the Americans or the Brits, what were your initial thoughts?
Okay, my initial thoughts were probably a little bit different to yours. Mm. I wasn't excited, but I also felt that we really had no choice, because I believe that China has treated Australia like shit for 6 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had a government that had decent pair, that'd actually say to China, fine, you don't want to buy our barley or our wine, we're not going to sell you any of our fucking iron ore either. Pardon the language. But I do get rather angry and frustrated over this whole thing. Now,
so hang on. So you're thinking because of our poor relationship with China,
yeah,
it was a good idea to go nuclear.
Well, I can understand why the government decided to go nuclear. Now, I honestly believe that we went to nuclear because we were under pressure from the United States to get involved and do freedom of navigation operations through the South China Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And with a nuclear-powered submarine, you could get there without a problem. You could get there and back without a problem. Now, I'm not sure whether the distance would be what?
we could get there without a problem and get back. Just being there would be a problem, wouldn't it?
Okay. Yeah, we could get there and back without a problem. Okay. Assuming that China doesn't then depth charge us and that sort of shit while we're there, then we've got problems.
What do we want to do while we're there in the South China Sea with our nuclear submarine? What exactly do we want to do over there?
You didn't let me finish. I'm not convinced we should be over there. However, right. I can understand why the Yanks wanted to provide us with nuclear submarines so we could get over there without a problem.
Yeah, so from their point of view, I can fully understand it because they have.
Yeah, yes. So can I. Because now they've fully armed their deputy sheriff in this neighbourhood.
Yeah, they can.
So they've fully armed the deputy sheriff in this neighbourhood.
Yeah.
So we could go over there. We could do freedom of navigation operations over there and move. You know.
Okay. Let's just put some structure to this, Scott. So first up, the deal with the French had to end at some point because it was going to be impossible to build these submarines.
They were trying to reverse engineer something that was supposed to be a nuclear-powered submarine, but they were going to reverse engineer it to put in a diesel electric.
Yes.
Which was never going to work.
And basically, you know, submarine experts said they couldn't imagine a more complicated or risky procedure to do in terms of major technology with a large infrastructure piece like that. Yeah. So we should have
just bought them off the shelf from Japan and moved on.
Okay. Anyway. Well, then why, if that's the case, Scott, so we both agree the deal had to end. Everybody agrees on that because it was a stupid deal. But
I think the way it was ended, it was wrong.
Yeah, okay.
I think that we should have ended it a little nicer than the way we did.
Okay. But you said we should have in the beginning have bought some cheap Japanese ones.
Yeah, we should have, absolutely.
So why shouldn't we have bought them now? Why not buy those cheap Japanese ones now?
I don't know. That's the whole point. There's obviously been some sort of discussion between the United States and Australia about Australia's role in trying to keep China in check.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what it looks like, that's what it smells like to me, is that there's been some sort of involvement to get us involved, have the ability to travel that far north to be a pain in the ass to the Chinese.
Well, let's face it, a nuclear-powered submarine is used for attacking other countries, right?
Yeah, that's why they call them attack-class submarines,
And really, as Australians, shouldn't we just be worried about defending ourselves?
One would have thought so.
So,
which is why I think we would have been better off buying the cheaper, smaller Japanese submarines. They could have just patrolled in the water close to Australia. Had anyone actually come in here, we could have sent them further north, torpedoed them on the way down here until they got into the range of our surface-to-surface ballistic missiles, which would then neutralise the invading fleet.
Indeed. And
by that stage, the Yanks would have got involved and that sort of stuff. You know, that's probably why we put Marines up there in Darwin, because if history tells us anything, you've got to kill Americans to get them involved in the war. So,
Joe the Tech Guy, you got any thoughts on this submarine defensive, offensive choice of submarine at all?
I know that the Navy are quite keen for an offensive role.
Yes.
But the need for it. But yeah, it seems silly that nuclear submarines make sense in terms of a fuel. Mm. The one place you do want nuclear reactors are in long range naval vessels.
Mm.
Absolutely. And I agree wholeheartedly with you.
So if we did have a real reason to be in the South China Sea, then I agree we should have a nuclear submarine. But we don't have a good reason to be there.
It was interesting reading the comments about we think France as being Europe, but actually there's French Polynesia and there is New Caledonia, which are literally on our doorstep.
Mm.
And so France has a lot of territory just east of us,
mm-hmm.
which they're very keen on defending, and that's why they wanted the bilateral relationship.
Keep going. Sorry.
Well, any expansionist...
Because everyone knows that China's had its eye on Tahiti for a long time, you know?
No, I don't think China is expansionist. I honestly don't believe China is expansionist. China just wants China just wants its own territory back. They want to reverse the 100 years of humiliation. Yes. That's why they've started suppressing everything in Hong Kong and Macau. Mm-hmm. China is not going to try and take back anything, is not going to try and take anything new. They're only interested in conquering their old territory. They want Taiwan back. Mm. They want Hong Kong back. Mm-hmm. You know, I can understand that point of view. However, I honestly believe they've got to take a long, hard look at themselves in the mirror and say, well, yeah, we might call it a renegade province, but it's been a renegade province ever since the end of the revolution, and I don't think we can ever have it back. Mm. You know, I think that they've got to negotiate. I think that what would be good is if China actually sat down with Taiwan and negotiated away the whole argument over the South China Sea, and, you know, if Taiwan dropped their claim to the South China Sea, China would then drop their claim to Taiwan. You know, that is what I believe would be a reasonable position to get to, but I don't think you're ever going to get that.
It's a bit like Mexico. They really have to give up their claim to Texas and California and Arizona. Just forget about it, really, and move on.
It's one of those things. Like, Mexico probably has a reasonable historical claim to those territories. However, they were pinched by the Americans.
You're right. They've got a better claim.
Yeah, they were pinched by the Americans, and, you know, they're just going to have to move on from it.
Let's give a little bit of history here. So the whole debacle had its genesis in liberal leadership tensions. So Tony Abbott had the correct idea to purchase the vessels off the shelf from overseas, probably Japan, at considerably lower cost. He actually had quite a good relationship with the Japanese Prime Minister of the day. But there was bad polling in South Australia and upcoming leadership battle with Malcolm Turnbull. So because of political reasons, saw him change his mind and plumb for the building of these submarines locally in South Australia in conjunction with the French, knowing that it would probably add about 30 to 40% to the price. So really the Japanese thought they had the deal, and very surprised when they lost it to the French. And the French, one of the reasons they won was this promise about local sort of building that would happen in South Australia. And the Japanese were a bit late in getting clued up to the need to say that. So that's how, and really at the time, they didn't even contemplate having the nuclear-powered version from the French, as if it was just completely off the table. And, you know, there wasn't like there was a major discussion in Australia about it. It was never on the table to sort of think about the nuclear-powered version from the French. I think because they were worried that they couldn't service them because we don't have a nuclear industry. But
we don't have a civilian nuclear industry here, which means you couldn't service the reactors here.
So, but surely we could train people to do it. I don't understand why we couldn't. We got smart people here. Surely it can't be that hard if the French can do it.
We've got one nuclear reactor in Australia, and that's at Lucas Heights, which is in the western suburbs of Sydney. Mm. Now, I don't believe it's big enough to provide you with the fuel rods and everything else that you're going to need to power a nuclear-powered submarine.
Right.
So what would you actually need to do is you would have to have a very long conversation with the public. And you have to sell them on the whole idea of a civilian nuclear industry in Australia before you could then say to the French, yes, we'll buy your nuclear submarines. Mm. Or they'd have to duck back over to France once or twice a year or something like that to offload their fuel rods.
I think the French version of the submarine last about 7 to 10 years, whereas the American version lasts about 25 years or something like that.
Yeah.
So really it would have just meant, you know, shipping them over to France and replacing the rods and bringing them back again.
I believe the Americans were concerned about
correct
French technicians being on seeing American secrets on board the
correct Samsung. One of the problems was we were always going to put American weapons in them, and the Americans were worried that the French would learn too much about the American weapons and that they had breaches in their security and secrets would leak out through the French system in installing the American weapons in these submarines. So that was part of their concern.
Would they not have a problem with the Japanese finding out about American secrets aboard submarines that the Japanese had to service for us?
I think they trusted the Japanese not to leak to the Russians.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but here's one point.
God alone knows why.
Yeah, one point about all this, and we'll get on to the French and how they've been treated. But in my view, the French should never have agreed to such a stupid contract. So
absolutely, they should have said it's nuclear or nothing.
Yes, indeed. So when you're a supplier of something, you sometimes don't sell something if you know it's not appropriate for your customer. So I'm in the selling game, and, you know, we'll deal with art shops who might be looking at certain products, and we'll look at their shop and their clientele, and we'll say, look, I know you're really keen on this particular product, but from what I've seen of your business, this isn't going to suit you. It's not going to sell well, and you're going to spend a lot of money, and in 6 months' time, the stock's still going to be here, and you're not going to be happy with me. So because I want a long-term relationship with you, I really think you shouldn't buy this product and maybe buy this other thing or whatever. But, you know, at times we've said to people, we're not going to sell you this product even though you want it because we just don't think it's good for you. And the French should have done the same thing in this case. There's another example I can think of, friends of mine in the mining industry, where they're selling technology to other mines, and this particular technology, one customer wanted to use it with a mineral and it hadn't really been used with that mineral before, and they sold them the technology. And of course, they're now having huge problems at this mine site because it's just not working with this particular mineral. And that company is now going to badmouth this technology around the world, and it's causing them enormous headaches. And they really should not have sold the technology to them without, you know, a lot of more testing. And really, sometimes you just have to say no when somebody wants to buy a stupid idea from you. So,
yeah, exactly.
So while I've got some sympathy for the French, so there's that. There's also, it seemed that while the contract, the idea of the contract was that lots of work was supposed to be done in South Australia, and the French were always sort of backing out of that, of trying to get as much work being done in France rather than Australia. So that was another thing that was going on. But we really, you know, according to reports, the day before the announcement, we had written to the French saying, we're happy with everything. It's all smooth sailing, literally. And then the next day, Morrison, after informing the Indians and the Japanese and the Americans that he was going to cancel the sub deal, then informed the French by text message. Just, this is not
it. It was very poor form. You know, it really was extraordinarily poor form on Morrison's behalf. You know, he's extraordinarily clumsy with his international standing with people. He just doesn't seem to get it, does he?
He's just a bully and a prick.
Yeah.
And that's how he deals with people, whoever he comes across. So, yeah.
At least he didn't threaten to shirt front him.
No, that's true. Maybe he did and we just don't know. So, yeah. So what else have I got here in my notes? Yeah, not a squeak from the media about how bad the initial deal was, just how wonderful – well, first of all, how wonderfully quiet these nuclear subs are. And, dear listener, the way it works is, well, they're quieter than the diesel when they're operating, but a diesel you can actually shut off and convert to battery power, and that is silent, whereas – the nuclear power plant can never be shut down and the coolant is always running. So a nuclear ship on idle is noisier than a diesel that's switched off and is on electric. So if I was sitting in a sub in the north of Australia and I had been told by reconnaissance that the enemy ships are about a day away heading directly towards me, I ideally would like to be in a nice small sub, diesel electric, that I would then be switching straight onto electric for a few days while I waited for them to come and pop them off. And I reckon that would be the safest option for me if I was a submariner looking to take on somebody. So, of course, if I wanted to go over to the South China Sea and start launching missiles, I'd rather be in a nuclear sub. That's, you know, what are we there for? What are we using it for? That's the important part. None of that's being said.
And that's the whole point. I don't know what it is being used for.
Mm.
It's clearly something that the Yanks have actually said to the Australians, we're going to give you the arms. We need you to take the fight up to the Chinese.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be surprised at all if at some point a mistake happens and a torpedo is accidentally fired at something, or, you know, it's could get out of control very quickly.
So let me see what else I've got here in my notes. It's just about cost effectiveness as well. Like, you can get so much, you know, when you're talking about a small diesel electric sub, they are so much cheaper than these massive nuclear submarines. You can have so many more of them littered around the place. And the Collins class, so that's our current submarine, they're 3,000 tonnes. The now abandoned French-designed attack class, we're going to be 4,500 tonnes. And the American and British that we're now looking at are more than 7,000 tonnes. So it's two and a bit times the size of our current submarine. And that requires a lot of people to man these things. It's one of the hardest parts about operating a submarine fleet is finding people who want to work in one. And having these big monsters needing lots of people in them, it's going to be difficult to find the people to actually run these things. And if you think about it, in wartime, when you've got a massive investment in a sub where you've spent, you know, $8 billion on one vessel, you get scared to use it. You are worried about the cost of having that thing found and sunk. And if you actually have much, you know, $8 billion subs, if you like, you end up, you can take more aggressive and appropriate action. So they've certainly found in wartime that with some of the large aircraft carriers and other large vessels, they've become a little bit ineffective because the fear of losing them, there's so much money is poured into these things. So anyway, what have we got? We haven't even signed up.
We've got a dozen of them.
Yeah, well, the thing is we haven't even signed up to anything. All we've got is just a deal, which is, we're going to have a study for 18 months and we're going to talk to the Americans and the British about what we might like to have at the end of that 18-month period.
Well, the deal is that they're willing to transfer the technology to us, I think.
Right. But the actual cost and design and all the rest of it, we haven't struck any deal. And
haven't done that.
And at this point, if you're the British or the Americans selling the subs, you know that, well, what's Australia going to do? They can't go to the French. Who else is going to want to deal with us? It's not like there's a competitive process now. So we're just going to have to accept the least worst option of whatever this study comes up with. Like, we've really screwed ourselves in terms of options of international players who could participate in this.
Don't the Russians have some spare nuclear submarines they can sell us?
You know, the smart thing would have been to say to the French, hey, guys, big mistake a few years ago made by these dunderheads. Obviously, this isn't working. We're going to have to go nuclear if that's, you know, what we're going to say. Why don't you give us a tender price on making these nuclear? And then we're going to compare that to a tender price from the US and the UK. Something like, keep the French in and say to them, why didn't we do that? We'd had an agreement with them to build this other ship. The Americans were going to put weapons in there. It was all agreed to. Well, it would have been so easy just to say to the French, give us a quote on making it nuclear, and everyone would have been happy.
Yeah, but you're dealing with a group of clowns that think they're business people, but they don't understand business.
They don't understand.
You know, because that is honestly the first thing a business person would do is say to get two competitors, sit them down and say, right, you give me a quote, you give me your best price, and then we'll make a decision after that.
I'm surprised they haven't opted for coal-fired, actually.
Yes, that's right. Smart coal, clean coal.
Yeah.
So, okay, one of the things in this is just the acceptance in the media, in these reports, that we need these subs because of the growing threat from China. And even, you know, The Guardian will say something like, US, UK and Australia forge alliance to counter China. And it's just accepted that there's this Chinese threat.
Well, they released the virus on us.
That's right. So they're done with us. Yeah. Honestly, it's just getting ridiculous. This, you know, what has China been doing that is so aggressive? They're not buying our shit. What are we doing to France? We're not buying their shit. You know, this whole we're at war with China is 1984 playing out in 2021 in Australia. We've always been at war with East Asia, I mean China. It was only in 2014 that we signed a free trade agreement with Xi Jinping, and he was in our federal parliament and being lauded not only by Tony Abbott, by the entire Murdoch press in what a great deal it was, the free trade agreement, how wonderful
it was. That was all Labor's fault.
How wonderful it was to bring our countries together. This was only in 2014. And what have the Chinese done since that time in terms of aggression beyond when not buying your shit? And is that it? Is that it? Scott, you think there's massive provocation by the Chinese?
I don't think there's massive provocation. I just honestly believe that China has behaved very abruptly, curtly, whatever you want to call it, to Australia. They have treated us very badly for a long time.
But not buying
not buying stuff, but also they've gone in there and they've made all sorts of comments about, you know, you want to make sure if you're going to travel to Australia, because we're hearing reports that Indians are having the living shit kicked out of them, that there's racism across in every street and all that sort of thing. There is that sort of stuff that the Chinese government has actually put out.
And have we done anything? Have we done anything that might have caused them to say that? Have we accused them of human rights abuses that they might say?
Oh, yeah, but the Uyghurs, that is a human rights abuse, what they're doing there. They're locking them up. You know, that is clear-cut a human rights abuse. Mm. Now, have we actually said that publicly? Yes, we have. Now, you know, the most offensive thing I think Australia has done was when ScoMo said we've got to send in inspectors with weapons inspector-like powers.
Correct.
That was wrong. Mm. It was clearly a wrong thing to do, and that is why.
And that's what kicked off most of these.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. Yeah. That is most of what's kicked it off.
Just to recap here, I mean, this really is 1984 with, you know, we're at one moment we're at war with East Asia, then we change and we're always at war with Eurasia or whatever. I mean, this is 2014, so Tony Abbott boasted about his history-making trade deal with China as one of his greatest achievements as Prime Minister. He's since said that it was wishful thinking and he had a very benign view of China. But similar mea culpas haven't been forthcoming from the coalition's stenographers and cheerleaders in the Murdoch press. So Paul Kelly from The Australian has never admitted he was wrong in lauding the deal as, quote, a moment of transformation of global significance, pointing the way to a glorious future in which an astute Xi would pull Australia far closer into China's orbit in coming years. This is all from The Australian. So let me just see here. This is what Kelly was saying at the time. The upshot is that China has gone beyond most Australian expectations in the free trade agreement. This is a strategic economic decision by Beijing that constitutes the platform for a wider partnership. It contradicts, again, so much of the misguided local commentary suggesting the Abbott government was risking relations with China. In his speech, an astute Xi bypassed any potential source of trouble. For Abbott, the speech was pure upside. China is playing a long and clever game with Australia. The message is writ large. Australia and China are going places together. This is from The Australian. Greg Sheridan lauded the deal and insisted that there is not the slightest evidence that any Australian tradie would be a loser under this agreement. And he was scathing in his criticism of Dan Andrews, as Dan Andrews questioned whether it was all upside in this thing. So, and he basically poo-pooed Labor for questioning whether this free trade agreement was all as wonderful as was being painted. So now, 7 years later, and really it's been happening, you could probably say a couple of years ago it started, probably 5 years later, and I think in 1984 it was every 5 years that the enemy changed. So now News Corp and the government now insist exactly the opposite, that Labor is too soft on China, indeed has fallen into China's trap. In the words of an Australian editorial in December, Sheridan's reversal has been particularly risible. In 2015, he was criticising Daniel Andrews. Last year, he was complaining that Andrews has handed China a propaganda victory for signing up to a Belt and Road Agreement. So editorial writers in The Australian have gone from declaring, under the free trade agreement, we welcome Chinese investment in Australia, to cheering the government's blocking of Chinese investment. Like, you really have to understand how quickly this has just turned around.
And they haven't fired a single Darwin.
Yes, exactly. And what has China fired a single missile at us? What have we done? It's plenty of provocation where we said
we made a very provocative statement when we said that we should send in inspectors with weapons inspector-like powers.
And
that
also,
was wrong. It was very wrong, and it was completely clumsy of Morrison to say it.
Yeah, and also we're complaining that they're not buying our shit. Meanwhile, they wanted to bring Huawei in here and set up 5G, and they wanted to buy different infrastructure things, dairy farms and stuff, and we said, no, you can't buy it. So now I agree we shouldn't allow China, Huawei, to set up 5G. There are some things you just can't allow, but people have to be able to view this from the other person's point of view. You have to be able to put yourself in the place of the Chinese, who are a superpower, and this pissy little nation down here is having a big whinge fest.
That's very true.
Yes. So now, the other thing, if all this, of course, is right at this moment, we're trying to get a trade deal with the EU.
And yeah, we just pissed the French off.
That's right. So,
he was incredibly stupid of Morrison because, you know, he didn't understand that with Angela Merkel stepping down, the de facto presidency of Europe was slotting over to Macron, you know, to what's his name?
Macron.
Yeah. It was slotting over to Macron, and yet he just upset the French.
Yep.
You know, so our one ally in those whole EU trade negotiations has turned around and told us to get stuffed.
Yep. And so the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, said, one of our member states has been treated in a way that is not acceptable, so we want to know what has happened and why, adding that the situation must be clarified, quote, before you keep on going with business as usual. Meanwhile, our Trade Minister, Dan Tehan, that's not depressing enough for you, Dan Tehan says, it's just very much business as usual when it comes to our negotiations on that free trade agreement.
Jesus Christ.
EU Commission saying, you need to explain yourselves here. It's not business as usual. Dan Tehan is saying, oh, I think it is. Meanwhile, at the very same time in the last couple of weeks, Australia is opposing China's bid to join a trade pact until it halts its strikes against our exports. So China on Thursday formally applied to join the world's biggest trading agreement, the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, but it will require the unanimous support of all the PAC's members to be admitted. It was signed by 11 countries, including Australia, Canada, Chile, Japan and New Zealand in 2018. China wants to join. Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison and Trade Minister Dan Tehan, who says parties to the agreement must have a track record of compliance with existing trade agreements and World Trade Organization commitments. And Dan Tehan says Australia will oppose China's bid to join a key trade pact until it halts trade strikes against Australian exports. Does anybody just look at the rest of the world must look at us and go, we are just a shitty bunch. We are just a shitty bunch, the way we just beat our chests and treat people badly and then whinge when they treat us badly.
I think most of the rest of the world, if they pay attention to Australia at all, it's just to laugh about the climate change.
Yes, yes. Why are we so behind the rest of the world when it comes to climate change with the other thing? Yeah, because your average citizen of another country isn't going to be too concerned with Australian trade relations or submarines for that matter. But, you know, we just behave shittily towards other people, and then when we get a smack on the nose back, we then go, oh, what do you mean? What? It's embarrassing.
There was, There was something very funny on Batuta Advocate the other day that said that I only had to laugh. He said that, oh, God, I've lost it. Anyway, keep going. It'll come back to me.
Yeah, no worries. Sorry. So now we've got AUKUS, this just a loose arrangement that in future will work more closely together between Australia, the UK and the US. And people think that is going to help our security in the region. It's going to do completely the opposite.
Who's going to go different to Five Eyes?
It just adds to the Chinese who are thinking, who's the Chinese will be thinking, who's going to attack us? America. And who might be helping them? Australia. Like, it just puts us in the mix in terms of if there is a war between China and America, then we're just once again underlining how close we are to America and that we're probably China's enemy.
The UK has never done anything against China.
No. And, they've got every reason to want to meddle in this part of the world as well, don't they? You know, it's so obviously a natural fit for them to be swanning around here, throwing their weight around. Oh, God's sake. Anyway, this is all a bit of a repeat of what happened back in just after the First World War. I've got a link to an article by Alan Patience from the John Menadue blog talking about one of our worst prime ministers, who was Billy Hughes, and essentially at the Paris Peace Conference, he did the dirty work in putting the Japanese offside and really...
That was really offensive.
Yeah, and basically Billy Hughes unleashed a tirade against the Japanese for proposing an anti-racism clause be inserted into the League of Nations Charter, and Japan was deeply offended by Hughes's interventions and on leaving the conference declined membership of the League of Nations. So he goes on that the Japanese saw clearly what Hughes was way too stupid to realise, that he was being cynically manipulated by the Gang of Four who were effectively running the show in Paris. So he did the dirty work to exclude the Japanese from the Gang of Four's White Man's International Politics Club, because the Japanese thought, we're a burgeoning power in the region. We want to have some say in what goes on here, and basically told to fuck off.
Japanese were actually on our side during the First World War.
Indeed. You go to Albany in Western Australia and you'll see how there's pictures of Japanese ships escorting Australian ships across the Indian Ocean.
To Turkey,
yes. Indeed. So according to this article from Alan Patience, the similarities between then and now are alarming. Hughes was happy to provoke the Japanese clumsily and insultingly because he believed the British and perhaps the Americans had his back. He also loved being in the company of the great leaders at the conference. He was sure he was one of them, crowing to his supporters back home about his achievements. He was the runt in a house of fighting cocks. And this guy says, Morrison displays the very same faults. He is already crowing about his achievement in forging a so-called new alliance with his forever friends. He is stupidly blind to the fact that for the past few years, he and therefore Australia has been manipulated by the Americans and now the British into being their Billy Hughes front man in thumbing their collective noses at China. AUKUS is simply the white man's burden writ large in the Asia Pacific, and Australia is its silly little cheerleader. So I like that article from Alan Patience. Scott, do you want to disagree with any of it or you think that's about right?
No, I agree with it. You know, I honestly believe that we've been co-opted into something the Americans want to pick on the Chinese for. And they sort of said, well, Australia's got problems with China right now, so let's, you know, bolster their ego and give them these nuclear-powered submarines. You know.
Yeah. So what does the average Aussie think of all this? Will it mean anything down the track? I've got an article here from The Shot, and put up on the screen a picture that up there. And this article is saying, I'll read a bit of it here. If I were in a TED talk right now, this would be about the time I pointed loudly to an oversized photo behind me of a group of American soldiers about to raise the US flag on a pile of war rubble. You know the one. You've seen that image at least once in your lifetime. Four or five or maybe even six soldiers grasping an almighty flagpole as they hoist the stars and stripes skyward like a giant middle finger the up yours of American supremacy. We all know the image. It's iconic. Now, riddle me this. Exactly how many people are in the photo? What date was it taken? What was the specific geographic location? Who took the photo? What were the soldiers' names? Details, schmetails. Nobody remembers them because nobody cares. It's the image that's important. The image is seared in people's minds purely because of its symbolism, its simplicity. That's how symbolic imagery works. When something is so large and powerful, so symbolic and simple, it infiltrates our subconscious, like that photo of the six American Marines in Iwo Jima. We may not be able to tell anyone about the details, but we can all recall the powerful imagery, what it represents, and more importantly, how it makes us feel. That's a grand narrative. That's the power of the grand narrative. It doesn't rely on detail. So I'm going to put another picture up, which is basically a picture of Scott Morrison with Joe Biden and Boris Johnson flanking him on the television screens as this sort of AUKUS announcement was being made. And so what the article is saying, that this is what Scott Morrison's team play with: imagery, the grand narrative, the idea you don't focus on the details too much, you just remember how it makes you feel. What Team Morrison want you to think over and above anything else, above the policy and the presses and the talk of, oh, my God, nuclear submarines and the Twitter chatter, what they want you to think when you think of Scott Morrison, when you talk to your friends, when you swap the goss, when you go to vote, they want you to think that Scott Morrison is a strong leader, a hero of our times. They want you to feel it and know it deep in your bones. So that's the way they keep that imagery afloat, is by pumping it full of air and reinforcing it all the time, constantly, every day of every week of every month. Scott is strong. Scott is our hero. Scott will lead us all to safety. So I think there's something in that, that Morrison looks good in a suit. I'll give him that. And he stands there and he's got,
looks good in the suit.
He's got the look. You know, like Corbyn in the UK didn't look good in the suit. You know what I mean?
No, he looked bloody awful.
Yeah, exactly. And so
I would have thought Biden would look the pick of the three of them in a suit.
Yeah, he looks sharp enough. But it's just people won't care about all the details that we've just spoken about what a shitty deal this is. All they'll go is, gee, Morrison, strong leader, you got us a deal with the Americans for nuclear subs. Must know his shit. Hooray. Like, that's what it's really going to come down to.
I don't think he does know his shit.
I know, but people won't get that. They'll just hear.
No. He doesn't know that he's shit.
No, he doesn't know that either. So maybe deep down he does. Maybe deep down he knows he's a con. It'd be interesting. Who knows? But, you know, he just needs to put out the picture of himself flanked by Boris Johnson and Joe Biden and says, look, I'm a world leader and I got us some nuclear subs. And all that stuff that we've just talked about is all for nothing. Your average Joe will know nothing about it, couldn't care less. I find that quite depressing. I don't know if there's anything I can do about it.
No, I agree with you. It is quite depressing when you realise that, you know, it's probably going to come down to that picture of those three men up there on the morning of the announcement of AUKUS. Mm. You know, no one actually will give a toss that there is no treaty or anything else that's being discussed.
Mm.
It's just an agreement that we're going to work together. Mm. But it doesn't even have that whatever clause it is in the ANZUS treaty that says that, you know, that they will come to the aid in conjunction with their democratic processes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't say the Marines are coming. That says that we're going to argue about it in Congress to decide whether or not to send the Marines.
Mm.
In the chat room, Sorry.
Sorry. In the chat room, Dire Straits says about the Iwo Jima photo. He says the cameraman missed the raising, had to get them to do it again. So it was fake, staged, whatever you want to call it. That photo.
Yeah, I know. Have you heard that? The point I was going to make. Yeah, they did actually do that a couple of days later.
Right.
And of the six blokes that raised that flag, I think two of them were killed in action or something like that. So they had to grab two more just to help it out.
Okay, right.
Yeah. It was very much a botched job.
Right, yeah. Mm. So it's really hard to get over that sort of imagery, and there's just no capacity for an opposition leader to get the same image being flanked by world leaders. It's a huge advantage in incumbency. When you've got the Murdoch press on your side, which the Liberals do. It's very hard for Labor to overcome that imagery, I think. So what I'll put up on the screen now, let me just see if I'm able to actually make that even bigger. So this is Essential poll came out today, and it said, which party would you trust most to handle the following issues? And on the issue of maintaining international relations, 37% trust the Liberals, 32% trust Labor. After the weeks that we've just had, people still think overall the Liberals are the best party for maintaining international relations.
And also managing the economy. I mean,
and that was the other one I was going to get to as well, is management of the economy. 41% say Liberals, 31% Labor. After the blowout in the budget that we've had, after the billions thrown at the Harvey Norms of the world and not clawed back, and then national security, Liberals 41%, Labor 28%. The Liberals have been in charge of this entire botched submarine project, and they're the reason why we're not going to have a submarine when the Collins class eventually rusts away and we don't yet have a new submarine, and they'll be responsible for it. Like, there's just these ongoing myths. And
a quarter of Australians think that the Liberals are going to address climate change.
Yeah. Well, it says, which party would you trust most to handle the issue of climate change? I guess that means if you're a denier, you would perhaps trust Liberals.
Maybe.
Yeah. So... fair workplaces, yeah. Fair wages and workplace conditions. There's also 28% would trust Liberals more than Labor over that. So.
For God's sake. You know, I'm up here in Dawson and, you know, I've got George Christensen as my local member and he's a fucking clown.
He's like, a member. He's,
sorry?
He's a country member.
Yeah, I know that, but he's a clown. He's absolutely ridiculous. Like, you know, I actually got to the point where I had to write to him when he made that dunderheaded argument over climate change and all that sort of stuff. I wrote to him, I said, Mr. Christensen, sometimes it's better to be keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool rather than open it and remove all pretenses all to the otherwise. Yeah, all doubt. That's exactly what I said to him. You know, he's a clown.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Just quickly.
Sorry, I'll shut up.
No, interrupt whenever you – not interrupt. Chip in, Scott, whenever you feel like it. So I mentioned Huawei earlier on. So really Huawei is this sort of state-owned and controlled technology company out of China who's really achieved some quite good technology with 5G, Joe. Like, are Huawei world leaders in some respects or not?
Yeah, they produce good quality, cheap phone. Well, not even cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say they're top of the middle tier.
Yep.
Obviously, Samsung and Apple are the two leaders, but Huawei produce very good phones for the money.
Yep. And they know something about installing 5G networks and things around, you know, around the world and other countries.
Yeah. I believe that they were, had they not been excluded on national security grounds, most countries, as in the UK, were looking at, I think they finally got pulled out.
Yeah.
But the UK and Australia were looking very hard at Huawei.
Yeah. And, you know, it's obvious they are definitely state-controlled and we can't have that operating our telephone system in America, in Australia. Like, that's clearly one we just...
No.
We have to say to them...
You have to say no to that. Yeah,
that's right. But that's where you say it really gently and you say, guys, it's just not a good look. Can't do it for political reasons. Really love your product. Wish you all the best, but just not for us, rather than... Yeah, we're not taking you. And by the way, we're going to tell the rest of the world that they probably shouldn't take you either because of the risk. And we're going to really thumb our noses at you, like, which is kind of what we did. So, but there was an incident where the daughter of the sort of Huawei, so Meng Wanzhou, the wealthy daughter of Huawei's boss, she was held in Canada on charges relating to America wanted to extradite it out of Canada. So she had flown, I think, from China to Canada and was on her way to Mexico. So she was just transiting through Canada. And American officials had a warrant for her arrest, which they got the Mounties in Canada to execute. and put her under arrest. She ended up in home detention
she ended up in a luxury
villa. Yeah, house arrest, yeah. But, you know, she was transiting through Canada and she was hauled out of transit.
Shadows of Julian Assange.
Exactly. And the reason was because there was another company which was alleged to have sold Hewlett-Packard computers to Iran to help them with their mobile phone operations. And America had an embargo or a ban on people selling stuff to Iran. And evidence came out that there was a close association between Huawei and this other Hong Kong-based company, Skycam. So they basically said that she was guilty of a fraud because she'd used some of the money from Skycam, shuffled it across to Huawei. That money was from selling Hewlett-Packard computers in Iran. And America had decided that it didn't want people selling stuff to Iran, because heaven forbid that Iran should have a half-decent telephone sort of system in place.
I think that violation of their trade embargo in Iran, wasn't it?
Yeah, in violation of the US
trade embargo in Iran and that sort of stuff, which, you know, which I could understand, but they were the only country that was actually out there enforcing the law, enforcing the embargo against Iran. You know,
what was their own embargo?
No, it was their own embargo.
Wasn't a United Nations embargo?
No, I agree. It was the US embargo. Yeah.
So anyway, what the Chinese did was they just started arresting Canadians.
Yeah, I know.
And popping them in the jail in China.
Yeah.
Yep. And even ones had been tried, they tried them again and said, oh, we'll give you the death sentence this time on those drug charges. So they basically
took hostages.
Played hardball took hostages, played hardball, and America has had to blink and said, well, we're just going to drop it now. And she got released and got returned to China. And she said she arrived triumphantly at the tarmac and told Chinese state media, if it wasn't for a strong motherland, I wouldn't have my freedom today. Pity Julian Assange can't say the same thing. Not that we're going to be taken prisoners. So that was interesting, that the Chinese just played hardball and said, stuff you, we'll start arresting people, throwing them in jail, death sentences, and leave our citizens alone. Anyway, you know,
the Chinese did. You know, they did actually just arrest people that were Canadians and locked them up. It was terribly cruel what they did. It was quite effective, but it was terribly cruel what they did.
Yes. But all you get from the headlines, even the ABC, says China played dirty to get Huawei Princess back, too dirty even to tell its own people, because they're sort of saying that the Chinese media wasn't explaining to its people the sort of prisoner swap that they'd had to go into. So, but, you know, the ABC's guilty as well. They didn't tell our citizens about the dirty backstory of the Iranian embargo that got her arrested in the first place, you know, just because America wanted to be pricks to Iran. So, yeah, so that was that. Scott, the Prime Minister's office issued an edict this week that all Liberal backbenchers must get approval before speaking to the media. And at the same time, Anthony Albanese's foot soldiers are already forced to send final drafts of opinion pieces to their leader for approval. Or force change before it's being submitted to newspapers.
Is that going to happen with Craig Kelly?
He's no longer part of the party, is he?
No. But I mean, is he going to have to submit it to Clive?
Oh, to Clive? Probably.
One would have thought so. I think it's really over the top. It's, you know, the politicians have never actually accepted that you can have a difference of opinion between the front and the back bench. Yep. And I honestly believe that Parliament is a lot poorer for that. Like back in the day, now I'm going to show my age here by remembering Hawke and Keating, you know, they did have differences of opinion between the front and back bench. And they did actually argue stuff out in public. Most of the real hell ding-dong fights took place behind closed doors, but they didn't actually try and suppress debate. They encouraged debate and they came up with a good set of policies out of that. So I honestly believe our parliament is poorer for it.
Very controlled of the politicians.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. So really, I remember when Shay was looking at pre-selection, looking at contesting, and they said, well, that podcast you've been on, you have to get rid of that. Tell them to take the episodes down. And now they're saying to elected politicians, well, you can't write any piece for a newspaper without running it past us, first of all. It's just embarrassing that they you'd want to be a backbencher.
No,
if you can't speak your mind over these things.
Yeah. You know, I honestly believe they ought to have they ought to be able to be strong enough to stand up to their own backbench, and actually they should actually be prepared to argue their point with the backbench and convince the backbench to go along with it. And then, you know, the backbencher could say, look, I didn't agree with it at first. However, after some back and forth, I've come round to understanding what they're saying. So, you know, that's why I think that you'd be better off moving on.
Yeah. Change of tacky. One of the earlier comments was from Jill, who said, let's lecture everybody about human rights and stop the Bill O'Wheeler family from being returned. Arrogant pricks and possibly low-hanging fruit. They would win the election if they just sent them home. So, Jill, the situation's so bad with the Bill O'Wheeler family that even the Courier Mail is backing that family now. Like, that's how things have gone. So the Courier Mail editorial said, yep, the world's gone mad, as if we needed further evidence that the world has indeed gone mad. Late Thursday, we learnt Federal Immigration Minister Alex Hawke granted 12-month bridging visas to all members of an asylum seeker family from Bill O'Wheeler. Scott, except the youngest girl, she didn't get the 12-month bridging visa. And she's actually been born in Queensland. The effect of the decision is the entire family now needs to stay in community detention in Perth. It's not only bizarre, but it's sneaky and heartless. And Hawke, this is Immigration Minister Alex Hawke, did not even have the courage to explain why the family's youngest girl had been denied the same visa as her family. Well, didn't even explain it.
It's because she's a terrorist, obviously.
No, she's not a terrorist, Joe. I mean, this is the whole point. Both those children were born here in Australia. Both of them were born here in Australia.
Yes.
Their parents arrived on separate boats. They met each other after they'd served their first initial term in detention, and they got married and they procreated. They had two children born in Australia. Mm. So I don't understand why the hell the two of them aren't just treated as citizens, and then, you know, why the government is so determined to make such a song and dance over this whole thing. It's four people. Two of them were born here in Australia. The other two met and fell in love in Australia.
These guys are complete pricks.
Absolutely. They are absolute bastards. You know, had they have just handled it very quietly before you'd even heard the term Bill O'Wheeler, then they could have just given them bridging visas and all that sort of stuff, say, and actually said to them, now, don't you talk to the media. And the four of them would have kept their mouths shut. I can guarantee that, you know. Mm. But, no, it's absolutely ridiculous. You've got a community that actually wants them there. You've got, you know, he worked in an abattoir. She worked as a volunteer and all that sort of shit. And you've shown that they are integral. They have integrated into the community, and the community loves and wants them. And the federal government's saying no.
And you've got a procedure that allows a minister just to exercise a discretion.
I know.
And say okay. And had, not setting any precedents here, but I'll just let you in anyway through my discretion.
Yeah. Had they have done that before they arrested them in the middle of the night, you know, because that's when it really blew up, was after that. Had they have actually had Alex Hawke or whatever the name of the immigration minister was at the time, had he have actually said to them very quietly, you can stay, but don't you dare talk to the media about this, then that would have been fine. No one would have ever heard of the town of Bill O'Wheeler.
Look, further evidence for being governed by a bunch of pricks here, Scott, is this blind trust and
and Christian Porter. Oh, yeah, that was fucking disgusting, wasn't it? You know, so, Christian Porter is an absolute prick. You know, now that's just completely indefensible what he did. He took that money from a blind trust and he said, well, I don't know who it came from. You know, now Malcolm Turnbull was dead right where he said, you know, it's akin to a bloke arriving at your office with a balaclava over his head and you're handing over a bag of cash.
Yes.
You know, it's exactly right. It's it really makes you long for the warm, loving care of Malcolm Turnbull.
Malcolm also said a blind trust is blind in that you don't know how it's investing rather than you don't know where the money is coming from.
Yeah, correct. Exactly.
So you're normally a blind trust is for, you know, say you become the president of the United States, your assets should go into a blind trust so that if you make decisions that benefit certain sectors of the economy, you're not influenced by your own money. You don't know whether your money is in petroleum or whether it's in other things. So you're not influenced in making a decision that might benefit your own portfolio because you don't know what your portfolio is. You essentially put somebody else in charge of your portfolio. You don't know what shares they've bought.
Yeah, it wasn't a blind trust. It was a bloody disgraceful thing that this bastard did. And you know, so I was very pleased when he actually stepped down from the front bench. You know, I got a text message from Landon Hardbottom saying that, oh, Christian Porter's gone. And I said to him, oh, Porter's gone. That's good. But I thought he'd actually quit Parliament. But no, he hadn't.
No, so this is the thing. He's still a member of Parliament. Like, it's as if this isn't a rule that's only applicable to ministers of Parliament. It should be applicable to any member of Parliament.
I agree wholeheartedly.
You just can't take a bribe.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it was. It was a bribe.
Well, you may not know who the person is, but
they'll let you know when it's time for the favour to be repaid.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like the whole risk of all this is that in 6 months' time you get a knock on your door and it's, oh, by the way, I'm Joe Bloggs and I gave you that money and now I want a favour. That's the whole problem with this. So, and the fact that these guys can't see this, they are just
– it's
– it was. There's just no accountability.
No, none whatsoever. It's
mind-boggling. And somebody like Josh Frydenberg defended Porter's actions.
I know.
Saying he had disclosed the donation in line with rules and blamed the opposition for the criticism, which he labelled as vicious personal smears. And he said the point about Christian Porter's legal defence is he did not use taxpayers' money, and that is very important, Frydenberg said. Labor will continue with their vicious personal smears and campaigns. I don't think Australians have got time for it. That's the state of democracy we've reached, that a minister says, oh, I don't think I should have to tell. If I don't know where it came from, it doesn't matter. And now a member of parliament, which he is now still, saying, oh, I don't think it's important to know where it came from.
It's no wonder they are dragging their heels on the
federal ICAC.
Yes, that's what the word I was groping for. Thank you very much, Joe. You know, that is, it's absolutely no wonder they're dragging their heels on it because these bastards know that that's exactly what the federal ICAC with some teeth would actually investigate.
Well, when are we going to bring it in this term? Wasn't that an election promise?
I don't know if it was a promise. It was something that was said in the election that I think, did sound like a promise. But then, actually, no, Morrison said that he was more concerned with COVID than he was with ICAC at the time. You know, so apparently you can't walk and chew gum at the same time if you're a federal parliamentarian.
But religious freedom and COVID you can do at the same time.
I agree, and that's wrong, you know.
In the chat room, Dire Straits says Porter will be back, sadly, and I think he's right. I reckon middle of next – if the coalition
the Tories win again, he could well be back.
Middle of next term, he could well come back.
Yeah, but
incredibly.
I don't think that he's got much of a chance in Pearce. Pearce is a 5% margin that he's on currently. If Western Australia votes the way they have in their state elections, then he's not going to be able – he's going to have a hell of a time holding his seat. So that would be good if he did actually lose his seat. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's always a possibility.
What's his opinion on climate change? Because what we've seen is former Liberals standing as independents on a climate change. So Liberal plus climate change seat.
You mean if his electorate is one who are full of climate deniers?
No.
Then he would deny it?
Most inner cities are, wasn't that why, what's his name, lost his seat? Tony Abbott.
Abbott lost his seat to Zali Steggall because she was running on a platform of action on climate change.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's no doubt there that you do have a – and that was also Malcolm Turnbull's seat, which was lost to – what was her name? The former AMA president.
Yeah, I can't remember.
You know, she won that basically. She was arguing the whole thing about climate change. So yeah. I do think there is a groundswell of support out there to people in inner cities that are prepared to vote against the coalition, but they're not prepared to vote for Labor. If you've actually got someone that's actually probably an economic conservative, but also saying that you've got to do something about climate change.
Right.
So you could actually see an enlarged crossbench after the next election. So you could end up with Albanese in minority government.
Shay in the chat room says West Australians are particularly pissed with the feds. That would make sense.
Absolutely, so they
it's going to be hard. Yeah, even the best of candidates that will have a backlash against them.
Well, yes, that's exactly true. Right. So I honestly believe that's Shay, is it? That's your normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
G'day, Shay. Yep. How are you? I hope I'm not stepping on your toes by being on here tonight. It's one of those things. I honestly believe that Porter would have a hell of a time winning that seat again if he did actually go again. Now, he said he's going to run. Well, he could well run, but he's probably going to lose because there is a hell of a stink against him right now because of what he's done with his blind trust. You know, there's a hell of a lot of stink around that, and it's just one of those things that is – really quite appalling that he's actually tried to get away with it.
Jill in the chat room says, I'll be so disappointed if the women of Pierce vote for him. Presumably they are more than half his electorate. Yeah. Well,
there were plenty
of American women voted for Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. Scott.
Yes.
Thoughts on COVID? You're fully vaccinated?
I am fully vaccinated, yes. Although I'm getting rather concerned that I had my vaccination, the second shot was on the 22nd of June or 28th of June or something like that. And they're saying that the immunisation starts to wane after 6 months. So that would mean that in 6 months' time, which is sort of the 28th of December, which is when me and the better half are looking at going to Singapore, I could be actually losing my vaccination by then. So I hope that they're going to start rolling out booster shots before I actually do want to go overseas. So anyway.
What date? When are you thinking of going to Singapore?
28th of December.
Right. Very optimistic of you, Scott.
You know, it's one of those things. You can – well, Dan T had said that the international borders will be open by Christmas. So, you know.
Yep. Okay. Just looking at – Essential Report came out with sort of about vaccinations – and the one that interests me with this is always the one where I'll never get vaccinated, and that's sitting steady at 6%. So that's a nice lowish figure, I think. You know, we hear a lot about anti-vaxxers that have been in the news, a lot, but 6% is a pretty low figure of the population that's saying I'll never get vaccinated. So that's heartening, I would have thought.
It is, you know, that would mean that you could potentially get as high as 94% of the country vaccinated.
94% of adults.
Yeah, but your kids will get vaccinated because if their parents don't care, then the kids won't care either. So
probably the kids will match the parents.
Yeah.
But at the moment it's down to 16.
No, it's 12. If you can get them, you can get them vaccinated as young as 12.
Because even over here?
Yeah, my brother's had both his sons vaccinated. One's 13, one's 12. And the only reason they didn't get their daughter vaccinated is because she's not old enough. But as soon as she hits 12 years old, she's going to go in for her first shot. Because we actually trust science in our family.
So there's an article from The Economist which was looking at excess deaths because it's very difficult to work out how many people have died from COVID, and in this article from The Economist, it says The standard method of tracking changes in total mortality is excess deaths. This number is the gap between how many people died in a given region during a given time, regardless of the cause, and how many deaths would have been expected if a particular circumstance, such as a natural disaster or a disease outbreak, had not occurred. So although the official number of deaths caused by COVID is now 4.6 million, according to The Economist, our single best estimate is that the actual total is 15.4 million people.
Holy.
And they find that there's a 95% chance that the true value lies between 9.6 and 18 million as opposed to 4.7.
So the problem with excess is we went into a lockdown for a long period, which meant the usual road deaths, the usual work deaths, all of those didn't happen. But on the flip side, people were avoiding going to a hospital for medical treatment. And so you heard of cardiologists who were saying that by the time people came in, it was too late to save them from the heart attack. If they'd come in 24 hours earlier when they were having their first twinges, they'd have been able to save them. So
But is that last one, is that last example really an example of a COVID death? Because it's kind of related to a COVID death, isn't it?
I don't think it's actually by a the COVID death.
Is it caused by the pandemic, though? It's sort of a pandemic-related death.
Or is it
death.
Caused by the lockdown, which is the reaction to the pandemic?
Yes.
But the point is it's not a simple take what your usual number of deaths are and look at the total number of deaths that we've had. That excess death is a complicated number.
Yes. Yes, that's true. It is a complicated number and it's not conclusive by any means. But anyway, that's a big difference. Current level, 4.7 million, but really arguably based on excess deaths, 15.5. It's interesting anyway. So that was from The Economist.
Okay, they actually stopped counting COVID deaths if they died outside of a hospital or a nursing home. You know, so there were all these people that were dying at home from COVID, but they weren't actually saying that they were dead from COVID.
Yeah.
There's actually a good talk by Professor David Spiegelhalter, who is a professor of statistics, talking about the statistics during the pandemic and actually looking at those numbers. He's also on the board of the Office of National Statistics, and he's done a number. He's regularly interviewed, and one of his things in his presentation was how much he gets taken out of context. But if you actually listen to him, it was very, very interesting talking about the deaths in nursing homes the deaths in private homes compared to nursing homes and hospital.
Yep. So got another interesting one to put up on the screen. And this one is about California. So California recently had an attempt to recall the governor. They've got a strange system there where, kind of like your state premier, you can have a re-vote on them if 15% or quite a small number of people ask for it. So anyway, they had a recent election in California, and I'm showing on the screen two maps of California, and the green is the people who voted for a recall, which means they wanted to get rid of the Democratic governor. And the map on the right shows the hotspots for COVID cases. And there's a really strange correlation
there, yeah.
Between wanting to vote the governor out, because presumably you're a Republican, and being a hotspot for COVID cases because of whatever reason. So you're either not taking precautions, you're not wearing your mask, you're not vaccinated. It's just interesting that something like vaccinations, mask wearing, et cetera, is becoming a political issue, lining up with your political belief.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely crazy. I was listening to Cognitive Dissonance this morning, and they were a couple of guys that I've probably spoken about before, but they were saying that Biden was right. This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated now. And he said, you know, in America where we're swimming in vaccines, you know, there should be no excuse whatsoever. Just go out and get the fucking shot, whether it's their exact words, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
There's a podcast called You Are Not So Smart that talks about...
Yeah, that's very good. I've listened
to it. Logical biases, and was talking about masks and how masks have become political.
Yeah,
and there was a three-hour-long episode which was all about talking to the anti-vaxxers in your life, or not necessarily anti-vaxxers, the people who aren't considering getting the COVID vaccine, and saying that actually a large number of people who are anti-mask and Republican are sneaking in the back door of pharmacies to get the COVID shot. Because whilst you can have a vaccine and still pretend that you haven't, it's very difficult to wear a mask and pretend that you're not.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? There we go. Hey, Andrew in the chat room said you're not seeing a map, but you should be able to see it. Surely that's working.
Yeah.
Everyone must be able to see that. I had it on and then off again.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I find absolutely ridiculous that they don't, that it's become a political issue about whether or not you get a vaccination. You know, and there was another thing that there was also on Cognitive Dissonance this morning, where was a guy that was saying that he'd written an article, and he said, you know, the reason why that the Democrats are all laughing at these Trump Republicans that are dying is because they want us all dead. Go out and get the shot to make sure that you don't die. You know, it's one of those things that is absolutely ridiculous, that it sounded like it was an article from The Onion or something like that, but it wasn't. They actually looked into it. It was a genuine article from a bloke that claimed that, you know, the Democrats want us all to die.
I found the article, actually. Yeah. He was the editor of a right-wing newspaper.
Oh, okay,
And it was Howard Stern, the shock jock, who was laughing about Republicans dying of COVID. Basically, he was laughing at people who had been vehemently anti-vax dying of COVID and saying, yes, this was a grand conspiracy to persuade Trump voters not to get the shot so that they die off because the margins are so narrow that then in the next election, the Republicans would lose a lot of marginal.
One of the things that I honestly believe could actually happen if you have enough of these right-wing Christian nutters, they're actually saying, you know, Jesus is the only vaccine I need, then they're going to end up dying. So you could end up killing off a hell of a lot of the problems for the Democrats.
Hey, something's really weird happening, Joe, where people couldn't see the map.
I'm looking for that.
I don't know why they wouldn't be able to see that. It's sort of showing up on ours, isn't it? So I just wonder if the map eventually shows up, could you just let us know in the chat room, because what we're looking at, it seems like it's there and it just doesn't make sense that you can't see that. So don't know what's going on there. So just keep us informed, or I'm going to have to move on anyway from that map. But also,
I'm seeing the map on Facebook.
Right. Okay. Maybe because I changed the screen to that one, Joe. I don't know what happened there. But okay. They've got the map anyway by the looks of it. So let me just put that on to you. Make it a bit bigger. Bit of luck. Okay. Just briefly, I think you sent this one, Joe, because in America what they're finding is that it's the Republicans who are dying from COVID. And they're starting to worry about the next election in that just the number of Republican voters are disappearing, which is going to give an advantage to the Democrats. So from Breitbart.
I honestly hope it does.
Right. So Breitbart, there was an article where they are basically accusing the Democrats of a kind of a reverse psychology. So here's the article from Breitbart, which is a very right-wing online magazine. Do you want to know why I think Howard Stern is going full monster with his mockery of three fellow human beings who died of the coronavirus? Because leftists like Stern and CNN and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Anthony Fauci are deliberately looking to manipulate Trump supporters into not getting vaccinated. Nothing else makes sense to me. So in a country where elections decided on razor-thin margins, it does not benefit one side if their opponents simply drop dead. Does it not benefit one side if their opponents simply drop dead? If I wanted to use reverse psychology to convince people not to get a life-saving vaccination, I would do exactly what Stern and the left are doing. I would bully and taunt and mock and ridicule you for not getting vaccinated. knowing the human response would be, hey, fuck you, I'm never getting vaccinated. So when you look at the only numbers that matter, which is who's dying, it's overwhelmingly the unvaccinated who are dying, and they're just, and they have just manipulated millions of their political enemies into the unvaccinated camp. So the right wing thinks it's a reverse psychology conspiracy. So that's what's going on in Breitbart. Scott, Queensland Police Commissioner Tarina Carroll has told officers they will be suspended without pay if they haven't had their first COVID jab by October 5th.
I don't have a problem with that. It's an absolutely sensible idea. You know, I wish you could make it mandatory. You can't make it mandatory. So, you know, you've got to be able to make it mandatory in the places you can. They can do it there. So I honestly believe they should do it.
So there was a case heard recently. It was a case of a health worker, and there's a New South Wales mandatory vaccination order on health workers. And so a health facility was able to say to people, you're sacked if you're not vaccinated, because our health order requires us to have you vaccinated. So that was in New South Wales recently. So with this Queensland one, there are exemptions, Scott, for police officers.
Some religious exemptions.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Jesus.
For medical, religious, or exceptional circumstances.
Have you seen the Flying Spaghetti Monster letter about vaccines?
Yeah, that was really very interesting, wasn't it? I heard about that on a podcast, actually. They said that they're going to issue an exemption to everyone that says that it's our religious belief that you can't force our people to work alongside someone who's unvaccinated.
Yes.
So they're saying that, you know, you've got to actually get everyone vaccinated to fit in with the tenets of the Flying Spaghetti Monster religion.
Right.
They had us in the first half. It was written that we're against harmful substances being entering into our bodies, and therefore it's against our religious beliefs for us to work against unvaccinated people.
Yeah.
See, someone like the Satanic Temple in America will have a bit of a problem here. Because in fighting the abortion laws, they say that everybody's body is inviolate and they have the right to make their own personal decisions about their body. So that would indicate a pro-anti-vax stance on religious grounds.
But the freedom to not work alongside somebody who is unvaccinated and therefore enforcing segregation.
It's one of those things. I don't think the Temple of Satan in the US would be actually arguing against vaccination. You know,
no, I don't think they would either. But no. If you take that basic tenet and apply it to this particular circumstance, there's a problem with it.
Well, there's a problem with it. You could actually say that you shouldn't be supporting compulsory vaccination, which you can't get away with in the US. I mean, Biden's trying in the federal government over there, and he's having a hell of a time getting it through.
Yes. Yeah, so...
You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. The United States was the second country in the world to come up with a COVID vaccine, you know? The first was Russia, the second was the United States. They're absolutely swimming in the stuff over there, but they can't get their people to take it.
Germany will stop paying compensation to unvaccinated workers who are forced into quarantine by coronavirus measures.
Absolutely, I agree wholeheartedly with that.
Yep, so it will affect people who test positive for the virus if they haven't been... vaccinated before. So that's a bit like what I was suggesting, where maybe sick leave shouldn't be available for a COVID sickness if you are unvaccinated, because you've had the chance to reduce the severity of it. Yeah. So
there's also, I did see an article by a healthcare worker saying a lot of healthcare workers feel that they've put their lives on the line to look after people in a very virulent and deadly disease. And the health workers have, you know, despite being young and zero comorbidities, have still ended up dying because of the high viral loads that they were exposed to initially. And they are sick of it. And they're saying that realistically, they want the ability to treat or to triage unvaccinated patients at the bottom of the list. And saying that this goes against their training to treat everybody equally, but conversely, they've put their lives on the line, they've sacrificed a lot for this, and they're sick of people who refuse to believe the science until it's in their interest, until they're sick enough that they want to come to hospital.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I think when resources get scarce, and there's not a lot of fat in the system when it comes to ICU beds and ventilators. So no. If it comes down to choices of doctors, we'll look at it and go, who's most likely to survive? Who can we help? Who is, if you're unvaccinated, you are putting yourself in the camp of perhaps not getting access to the limited number of ventilators. If there's a choice between you and a vaccinated person, that choice will mean that the vaccinated person more likely to get the ventilator because they're more likely to survive it. So,
Exactly.
That could all pan out. Terrible for the health professionals to have to do that. So, all right. Well,
it is terrible, but it's one of those things.
Scott, we're about to finish up here. We've made it to the hour and a half mark. Even though Shay's not here, we have to get there just to keep her out of the shark tank that Landon Hardbottom threatens her with every week. So any issues that you've heard over the past 2 years, Scott, that you wanted to chip in on about that you wanted to disagree with or anything? Or you just wanted to agree with me on everything?
No, I don't want to agree with you on everything. It's one of those things that I thank you very much for having me on tonight. I really enjoyed it. And the Essential Lord Don, thank you very much for welcoming me back. I thoroughly enjoyed myself tonight. It was really good. It was like being back on the horse again. It was really good. So thank you very much.
All right. Well, you're looking good, Scott.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to sign off. Next week, I will have an interview or a book or something. I'm not exactly sure what that might be, but something a bit different. And then with the panel in 2 weeks' time, I think Shay will be back by then. So, Scott, we might see – well, I'm away this weekend, but you're possibly going to be in Brisbane.
Yes. So lockdown. If Brisbane isn't locked down, I'll be in Brisbane this weekend. Yeah. So
right. Do you want to tell people where you're going to be, or should they just contact you privately? It's up to you how public you want to be with that. Scott, if you know Scott and you want to see Scott,
send us a message and I'll get in contact with you. Yeah.
Yeah. In Brisbane,
Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Yeah.
Venue too. It's the top secret.
Exactly. But, yeah. But the venue will be made available to you if you wish to contact me.
All right. No worries, Scott. Enjoy that. And to everybody else, thanks for tuning in. I'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.
Okay. See you. Bye now.
Good night from him.
Let's say China. You take China.
China.
China. I love them. China. China. And I have to have my China. China. China because China. 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 China.
I know China very well.
China.
Northwest Wisconsin, where I'm from.
It's China to me. China. 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 You want to buy from China? That's great. Buy from China. Buy toys from China. China in particular. China. China. I have people that I know in China. 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 China!
Let me ask you about China.
China. I go to China. So don't tell me about China. I know China.